Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, April 4th. I'm Joel Ficklin reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, North Coast Assembly Rep says state budget will take huge hit. Bill to cap insulin prices in California unanimously passes committee. And Trump tariffs spark worldwide reaction as Trump targets allies, adversaries, and uninhabited islands. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Chris Rogers, the North Coast State Assembly representative, has warned of hits to the state budget that were unforeseen when the governor's initial version was drafted. Daniel Mintz reports.
Meeting with a Humboldt County community group, Assemblymember Chris Rogers gave an update on the state budget, which will be impacted by January's catastrophic wildfires. During the March 26th online meeting with the Community Economic Resilience Consortium, Rogers summarized the state budget situation and its relevance to local funding. Elected last November, Rogers is a member of the Assembly's Budget Committee. California's budgets over the last 2 years have had large deficits, with a $73 billion deficit last year. Released last January, Governor Gavin Newsom's preliminary budget proposal for this year includes a slight positive balance, but Rogers questioned the cuts that allow it and warned of the impact of the Southern California wildfires.
So this year, the governor brought forward his budget. It already was going to be a bit murky to begin with. He zeroed out any funding for housing and homelessness services, which I know he knew that the governor or that the legislature was going to push back on. He proposed an 8% cut to our CSU, UC, and community college systems, which he knew that the legislature was going to push back on. He also backfilled nearly $500 million in funding with the Prop 4 bond, which he knew that we were going to push back on because that was not the intent, was to backfill programs when voters passed that. And all of that was before you had the LA fires and before you had Trump take office. And as happens in most big fires, LA has gotten an extension on when their property taxes are going to come due. I think it's been 6 months that they were pushed back, that for folks who are in the fire impacted areas. Also, for folks who unfortunately lost everything, they pay property taxes on the value of the land, not on what the home was worth prior to the fire. So we already know that that element by itself is going to be a fairly huge hit to the state budget that's going to need to be accounted for.
Rogers added, quote, "We also know that you've got Trump in the White House, and every single tweet creates new chaos and new uncertainty around budget, particularly for things like Medi-Cal." Rogers described the state budget as a statement of priorities and values and said he's opposing education cuts that will affect Cal Poly Humboldt and cuts to Medi-Cal.
I've been pushing back on the education cuts to our CSU system for Cal Poly Humboldt and for Sonoma State and for others. We are working through what that actually will look like when the May revise comes out and we have a better understanding of how much money the state is going to be operating with. We have a better understanding of what all of the changes at the federal level are going to mean at the local level. And then we're going to have to talk about what our value systems are and where we want to backfill to the extent that we can some of the federal government. I'll tell you, California gives about $100 billion a year in tax credits, and we've been going through that. About 2% of that goes to low-income families. It's the earned income tax credit, the young child tax credit. And we've been looking through candidly to see what other tax credits that we give would I rather eliminate than, say, cut education or cut Medi-Cal. So we're having those active conversations now in advance of what the May budget will look like, so that come June, we can deliver on something that not only do I view budget documents as a value statement, but I really look at it as an investment tool for our communities as well. What do we want California to look like?
During a question and answer session, Matt Rees, CEO of the Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District, talked about a nationwide trend of hospital closings and the role of Medi-Cal.
There's been 10 hospitals closed across the U.S. in this so far this year in 2025. And so I really appreciate you guys paying attention to Medi-Cal and the state budget there and making sure that we can continue all the programs there. I know everybody's worried on our side. We have one hospital that is going through bankruptcy here in California, and we've had others close in California. And so Medicaid is a big part of what funds our hospitals. Our hospital's 45% Medi-Cal. Mm-hmm. And so we really rely on those payments, and we participate in a lot of programs because our initial payment from Medi-Cal only covers about 15% of our costs to take care of patients.
Rogers said that although there's partisanship nationally, Republican and Democratic legislators in the state's rural areas are dealing with the same problems on issues like health care, and there's a sense of partnership on addressing them. The meeting also included some discussion on pretty dire predictions, quote unquote, about impacts of moves made by the Trump administration. Rogers said a combination of financial circumstances and uncertainty related to Trump's policies has caused one of Humboldt's offshore wind energy developers to freeze its investments. But another developer is moving forward, he said, and California is supporting wind energy port development. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
20,000 UC workers strike to protest unfair labor practices. Third such strike in 2 months. Future strikes likely. John Libarger Martel reports.
More than 20,000 University of California employees, members of unions AFSCME 3299 and UPD CWA 9119, went on strike across the state on Tuesday, protesting unfair negotiation practices by the university and trying to force them to bargain in good faith. UPD called an unfair labor practice strike the third in 2 months, while AFSCME struck in solidarity. UPD is accusing UC of rendering the bargaining process, quote, hopelessly ineffectual through an illegal divide-and-conquer strategy where they try to separate newly organized groups of workers into individual bargaining units. They say the university has also unilaterally and unlawfully increased the cost of healthcare for its employees outside of the bargaining process, which necessitated UPD and AFSCME's previous two unfair labor practice strikes in March and in February. At UC Berkeley, spirits were high. A recently graduated student conductor, now an UPD member, brought out the Cal marching band and picketers danced the Cupid Shuffle. Still, they recognize the importance of their protest. Simone Johnson, an UPD member, is a mechanical engineering technologist at Lawrence Berkeley National Labs. She says she'd like to be back up on the Hill, designing and assembling stunningly complex magnets for particle accelerators and researching fusion power systems, but that UC's stagnant wages, illegal healthcare cost increases, and refusal to negotiate fairly has forced her to strike and join her coworkers on the picket line.
Limitless free energy. We are getting closer and closer to it every day. I'm not helping with that today because I have to be out here fighting for my future, fighting for the future of my family. The actions of the UC Regents are robbing the people of California and the people of the United States, and really all people, from, you know, us being able to move knowledge forward, because we have to preserve our own well-being and the well-being of our family.
She says her very ability to continue on at UC hinges on the university agreeing to wages that actually keep up with inflation.
What's on the table for me is being able to continue working at the lab in the long run. If wages historically have not tracked inflation very well at the lab, and if they don't continue to do so, I won't be able to continue doing my work that I've spent 15 years of my life on. The regents have a responsibility to make sure that their workforce does not fall behind, because if the workforce falls behind, the workforce will shrink. We will leave.
She says that within the national context of inflation and the Trump administration's attacks on labor and higher education, more and more of her coworkers are coming out to the picket line.
I think it's impossible to not see the actions that we're taking as part of a larger struggle. You know, this is the largest labor action that has taken place in the age of Trump. I think that, you know, somebody has to actually take a stand. A lot of the traditional people that would are proving to be cowards and refusing to actually stand up. What's got me out here and what I was able to get coworkers out here for, even people that aren't normally sympathetic to the union, is why is the UC raising our healthcare copays now? If we don't get out and actually strike now, what else are they going to do later? If we don't stand up now and fight now, you know, they're already not allowed to do this. So if we give them an in, what else are they going to take from us?
AFSCME members joined the picket line in support of their UPD coworkers. Rosario Zamora, a custodian at UC Berkeley, said through a translator that UC's neglect of its employees' needs has everyone struggling, and that all members of the labor movement are in the struggle together.
The fact that the university is not giving us the contract that we want is making it very difficult to live here in the Bay Area. For instance, I drive from Concord to Berkeley, and everything is just becoming so much more expensive, like gas and food and just the things that we need to survive. And so we're going through an inflation right now, and our wages are stagnant, and the university is not listening to us, that we're not able to make ends meet with the wages that we currently have.
With each wave of strikes, Tuesday being the third, UC has had to hire scabs, pause research, and generally incur greater costs. No great progress has been made yet at the negotiating table as a result of the strikes, but AFSCME and UPD members and leadership are committed to doing whatever it takes to win a fair contract. More strikes are sure to come. For KPFA, I'm Jacques Leibarger-Martel.
In state news, bill to cap insulin prices in California unanimously passes committee after earlier version was vetoed by Governor Newsom. Kennedy Cuello reports.
State Senator Scott Wiener's bill to cap insulin prices passed out of committee unanimously. The Act SB 40 would cap insulin copays at $35 for people under state insurance. Over 4 million adults in California have diabetes and rely on daily insulin to survive. SB 40 would also require state-managed insurance plans to cover equipment and supplies for the management and treatment of diabetes, such as blood glucose monitors, insulin pumps, and syringes. Wiener says this is important because of how many Californians have diabetes.
So many people rely on insulin to stay alive. It's not an optional drug. It's not the type of drug that if you don't take it, you just won't be as healthy. It's if you don't take it, you will not be able to survive. It's critically important, and there are too many people in California who struggle to afford insulin. We know that Congress created a $35 copay cap for Medicare recipients. We should do the same thing here in California for the plans that we regulate at the state level.
Christine Falabella is the Director of Government Affairs and Advocacy at the American Diabetes Association. She says that the high cost of life-saving insulin forces people into making hard decisions. She said one out of six people with diabetes ration their insulin because of cost. Skipping doses can lead to complications such as increased risk for infection, heart disease, and even blindness. She emphasized that California is behind in helping those with diabetes.
To fight this crisis, 26 states and Washington, D.C. have passed laws to limit monthly out-of-pocket spending for insulin, and Medicare beneficiaries have their out-of-pocket monthly spending for insulin capped at $35. But California is yet to join them. When people cannot afford the medication necessary to manage their diabetes, they scale back or forego the care they need to manage their health, exposing themselves to complications. Or they are forced to choose between paying for their medication or rent, utilities, and other necessities to live. Senate Bill 40 offers a solution to ensure that people with diabetes can afford the medication they need to survive.
In 2023, Wiener introduced a bill very similar to this one. The bill went through the Senate and Assembly unanimously, with bipartisan support. However, when the bill reached the governor's office, Gavin Newsom vetoed the bill. Wiener is ready to try again and urges Californians to join the fight to pass SB 40.
People who care about this issue, and I think there are a lot of Californians who care about this issue, should absolutely make their voices heard. You know, that people can certainly tell their representatives in the state legislature that they support the bill and the governor. So it's always good to make your voice heard.
The bill passed the Health Committee unanimously and will go to the Appropriations Committee within 30 days. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Cuello.
In national news, Trump tariffs spark worldwide reaction as Trump targets allies, adversaries, and uninhabited islands. Christopher Martinez reports.
A day after issuing his Liberation Day tariffs, President Donald Trump gave his rosy assessment.
You'll see how it's going to turn out. Our country's going to boom.
Trump spoke to reporters as he left the White House to go to one of his golf clubs in Florida.
I think it's going very well. It was an operation, like when a patient gets operated on, and it's a big thing. I said this would exactly be the way it is. We have $6 or $7 trillion coming into our country, and we've never seen anything like it. The markets are going to boom. The stock is going to boom. The country is going to boom.
The boom in the stock market so far has been the fast loss of $1.5 trillion in share values. And while Trump says other countries will try to make a deal with the U.S., that's not exactly what they're saying. Ursula von der Leyen is the European Union's Commission President.
I deeply regret this choice. Let's be clear-eyed about the immense consequences. The global economy will massively suffer. Uncertainty will spiral and trigger the rise of further protectionism.
Trump's tariffs would affect 70% of the EU's exports to the U.S. The European Union is expected to announce its retaliatory tariffs on the U.S. in mid-April. Von der Leyen calls Trump's tariffs a major blow to the world economy, and European leaders seem to agree. Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said in a speech Thursday morning, "Returning to the protectionism of the 19th century is not a smart way of tackling the challenges of the 21st century." Belgium's Prime Minister Bart De Wever described the tariffs as wealth-destroying protectionist madness, and he cautioned against a trade war, saying stupidity should not be met with stupidity. French President Emmanuel Macron also weighed in.
La décision qui a été annoncée cette nuit est une décision brutale et infondée.
He calls Trump's tariffs brutal and unfounded, and he said European countries should suspend planned investments in the U.S. The European Union was hit with a 20% tariff, twice the 10% minimum tariff some other countries got. China was hit with a new 20% tariff, bringing its total tariffs now to 54%. China blasted the U.S. action as unilateral bullying, and its commerce ministry says it will take unspecified measures to safeguard its interests, adding, "There are no winners in trade wars, and there is no way out for protectionism." Canada, like Mexico, did not get hit with new tariffs Wednesday, but it already faces a 25% tax on Canadian steel, aluminum, and vehicles, and it plans to retaliate with a 25% tariff on U.S. vehicles. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney.
We're going to fight these tariffs with countermeasures. We are going to protect our workers, and we are going to build the strongest economy in the G7.
He says if the U.S. no longer wants to lead, Canada will. On the other side of the globe, Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese criticized what he described as Trump's unilateral action against every nation in the world.
The administration's tariffs have no basis in logic, and they go against the basis of our two nations' partnership. This is not the act of a friend. Today's decision will add to uncertainty in the global economy, and it will push up costs for American households. It is the American people who will pay the biggest price for these unjustified tariffs. This is why our government will not be seeking to impose reciprocal tariffs. We will not join a race to the bottom that leads to higher prices and slower growth. We will stand up for Australia.
As it happens, among the places hit with the Trump tariffs, a pair of barren, uninhabited volcanic islands near Antarctica, Heard Island and McDonald Islands. They're an external territory of Australia, last visited by people a decade ago. They were hit with a 10% tariff. Prime Minister Albanese's response, "Nowhere on earth is safe." Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Speaker Johnson cites constitutional limits to a third presidential term. groups plan nationwide protest against executive overreach. Farah Siddiqui reports.
There's a constitutional path. You have to amend the Constitution to do it, and that's a high bar. But I think he recognizes the constitutional limitations, and I'm not sure that there's a move about to amend the Constitution.
House Speaker Mike Johnson says President Donald Trump knows staying in office at the end of his term would require changing the Constitution, a very hard thing to do. But Trump's use of executive power continues to meet protests, with rallies planned nationwide for Saturday. Cole Dragota is with 5051 NC, which is organizing the events in North Carolina.
The majority of the people in our organization are either on Social Security or receive Medicaid or Medicare, and a lot of them are concerned that they're going to lose that.
Results are in from key races in Florida and Wisconsin. In Florida's 6th District, Republican former state Senator Randy Fine won the special election for the seat that had been held by Mike Waltz, who resigned to become National Security Advisor. In spite of beating schoolteacher Josh Wheel by 11 points in a district that went for Trump by nearly three times that margin, Fine is voicing confidence.
I'm going to help Donald Trump get his agenda done. Look, the House majority is very small. And while Donald Trump can sign amazing executive orders and take executive actions, he needs Congress to put it into law.
In Wisconsin, turnout is high in an expensive and contentious state Supreme Court race between conservative Brad Schimmel and progressive Susan Crawford. Billionaire and presidential advisor Elon Musk's $22 million donation to Schimmel has drawn national attention and sparked a people versus Musk pushback from Democrats. The contests are seen as early signals ahead of the 2026 midterms. Meanwhile, students are raising alarms over what they call threats to academic freedom and free speech. Students in New Hampshire are protesting the detainment of Romesa Ozturk, a Tufts University doctoral candidate arrested last week by masked immigration agents. Ozturk, who held a student visa, is now in an out-of-state detention facility. University of New Hampshire grad student Stephanie Black with the Palestine Solidarity Coalition says her group wants the university to declare itself a sanctuary for migrants.
It's an alarming pattern in which students are being targeted simply for exercising their First Amendment rights, and it's a direct attack on academic freedom.
Tension is building in Congress over trade policy. Several Democrats in the Senate are backing a resolution to block new Trump tariffs on Canadian goods. They argue the tariffs benefit billionaires at the expense of small business owners. Lawmakers pressed the nominee for chair of the Joint Chiefs about Signalgate at a confirmation hearing. When asked about the leaked Signal Group chat discussing Yemen airstrikes, Lieutenant General John Kane replied that he always uses proper secured channels for communication. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Now we go to Ray Hamill with the Kima News Sports Report.
The St. Bernard's Crusaders have put themselves in the driver's seat in the race for this year's Little Four Championship in baseball with two big wins this week. Hello and welcome to this week's K-Mud News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Crusaders' big week in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest high school and college baseball and softball news, as well as some community soccer news and more changes in the works for College of the Redwoods Athletics. But first up, it was a big week for the St. Bernard's baseball team as the Crusaders swept a pair of games against Ferndale in Little Four action and put themselves firmly in the driver's seat for this year's championship. On Tuesday night, the Crusaders edged their biggest challengers for the conference crown 4-3, and they followed that with a 6-3 win at Ferndale High School on Thursday. The two schools will face off twice more in conference play later in the month, but the early victories have put the SB boys two wins clear of their rivals, who have little room for error the remainder of the way. Also in the Little Four on Thursday, the Hoopa Warriors ended a two-year wait for a conference win by beating South Fork 12-1 in both schools' conference opener. In other baseball news this week, Arcata swept a doubleheader on Saturday, beating South Fork 14-0 and Hoopa 10-0, with Ben Lukens throwing a complete game five-inning no-hitter against the Warriors. The Del Norte Warriors also were in action last weekend at the Hidden Valley Tournament. The Warriors stretched their unbeaten streak to six straight games with a pair of victories and a tie. They opened tournament play with a 3-0 win over Wairika before tying Estacada 9-9 and beating North Valley 8-2, improving to 6-4-1 on the season. Fortuna and Ferndale also played on Saturday, with the Wildcats shutting out their neighbours and rivals 10-0. Also last weekend, St. Bernard's travelled to Point Arena and comfortably swept a doubleheader, winning 12-0 and 17-3. On Wednesday, the Eureka Loggers travelled to Roseville to play Oakmont High and lost both games in a doubleheader. The Eureka boys fell 4-0 in the opener and 8-1 in game two and dropped to 2-5 on the season. In local high school softball, the South Fork and Hoopa girls kicked off the Little Four with a doubleheader on Thursday. The Cubs won both games, taking game one 7-2 and game two 13-1. The South Fork girls are now 2-0 in the Little Four and 8-2 overall, with one of their losses coming against Fortuna last weekend as the Huskies continued their preparation for the Big Five. The McKinneyville girls were also in action on Saturday, travelling to Lower Lake for a pair of games and winning both by scores of 10-0 and 16-3. The Panthers are now 5-5 on the season. The defending Big Five champion Del Norte girls won three tournament games last weekend, defeating LaSalle 11-10, Redmond 3-1, and Ashland 10-0. They are now 5-1 on the season. A busy Arcata Tigers team played five games over the weekend. On Friday, they rallied in the seventh inning of an entertaining game against Ferndale and won 8-7 before splitting four games at the Trinity Tournament on Saturday, recording wins over Weed and Plumas Charter and losing to Biggs and Enterprise. The Tigers are now 3-4 on the season. The high-scoring St. Bernard's girls travelled to Middletown on Saturday and swept a doubleheader, winning 11-6 and 13-4. The Crusaders, who have scored in double digits in four of their last five games, are now 6-5 as they get set to defend the Little Four title they won a year ago. They opened the Little Four with a doubleheader against Ferndale on Tuesday after those games were postponed this week. The Big Five begins this weekend in both softball and baseball. Both Fortuna teams will host doubleheaders against Eureka, and both Arcata teams will host doubleheaders against Del Norte. In local college softball, meanwhile, the Cal Poly Humboldt women played three games against the number 15 team in the nation, Cal State San Marcos, last weekend and came away with three victories. The Jacks got the series off to an impressive start with an 11-3 win in game one and a 7-6 win in game two before dropping game three 7-2. But they responded to the loss with a series clinching 4-2 victory in game four. The Jacks are now 22-15 overall and 11-11 in the CCAA, sitting fourth in the conference standings. They will continue conference play when they play four games at Cal State Dominguez Hills this weekend. The College of the Redwoods baseball team was also in action last weekend and dropped two games at Lassen. The Corsairs fell 18-8 in game one and 13-6 in game two. They are now 2-11 in the Golden Valley Conference and 5-17 overall. In local soccer, meanwhile, Humboldt County Travel Club Sequoia FC is in the midst of a busy season and is fielding 10 teams this spring, made up of players from all around the county. Most of them were in action this past weekend, including a very busy under-17 girls team, which played three games in a 24-hour span, winning all three. The impressive Sequoia girls got the weekend started with a 2-1 win over Mendocino under the lights in Ukiah on Friday, and followed that by sweeping a doubleheader of action against North Bay Premier on Saturday, winning both games by identical 1-0 scores. In other local sports news this week, College of the Redwoods is seeking input from the local community in regard to a proposed mascot change. The Corsair has been the school's mascot since CR was founded in 1964, but concerns over the name have been raised recently due to its historical associations with Mediterranean piracy and the transatlantic slave trade. CR formed a mascot task force and invited suggestions from students, employees, and some community members this past fall. On Tuesday, the CR Board of Trustees postponed final approval on a new mascot in order to solicit more feedback from the community. And that's this week's Camelot News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer and thanks to our reporters. K KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. Reporting for KMUD in Redway, I'm Joel Ficklin.